AP Radio News. I'm Rita Foley. Rescues and evacuations. That's what's going on in Texas and Oklahoma after storms led to flooding overnight. Rain pushed the Blanco River to a record level in the San Antonio area. Here's Storm Prediction Center's Robert Hart.
The Blanco River in that area is out of its banks, and bridges are being washed away, and pretty catastrophic flooding in some areas.
Authorities in Comanche and Cleveland counties in Oklahoma say some stranded residents have been rescued from their roofs or their attics. Cleveland has been calm this morning, a day after a judge acquitted a white police officer in the killings of a black man and woman. Timothy Russell and Melissa Williams were shot dead after a 100-mile-per-hour car chase. Russell's sister, Michelle, urged protesters to remain peaceful.
We have to organize and try to figure out a way to stop this from happening ever again.
She says God will make the ultimate judgment in the case of Officer Michael Brelow. Gloria Steinem and two Nobel Peace laureates were among the women activists who crossed the DMZ, the dividing line between North and South Korea. They wanted to walk, but they were told they could not. Too dangerous. They were allowed to take a bus across the dividing line. Why do this at all?
We call for the official end of the Korean War.
Lema Gobawi is a Nobel Prize winner who was in that group that crossed the line. The Koreas have remained divided since the 1950 to 53 Korean War ended in an armistice, not a peace treaty. The Saudis say Islamic militants were behind the murderous attack on a Shiite mosque in Saudi Arabia on Friday. 21 people killed. The Saudi king is promising punishment. This is AP Radio News. What if you could take your dog to the restaurant with you? Our Julie Walker says New York is considering letting doggies eat out. I mean, really out. Open-air restaurants.
Dog lovers and restaurateurs say the proposal would safely accommodate people who want to dine out with man's best friend in places from Manhattan sidewalk cafes to rural ice cream stands. But a statewide health officials group is against it, and at least one lawmaker is raising questions. And some restaurant goers fear an onslaught of begging, barking, biting, and other doggy don'ts. Julie Walker, New York.
Calling California's traffic court system a hellhole of desperation for the poor, Governor Jerry Brown is proposing an amnesty program for residents who can't afford to pay off those spiraling fines and penalties that have resulted in almost 5 million driver's license suspensions since 2006. I'm Rita Foley, AP Radio News.
The Boys and Girls Club's highlights with Renthia Ross, VP Geico. Butler Wyatt takes a whole child approach to elementary education. Teachers, administrators, counselors, and support staff work together to meet the intellectual, social, behavioral, and emotional needs of 120 children ages 8 to 18. You can help make sure the Butler Wyatt Clubhouse doors stay open. Donate today at www.aplaceforthekids.com.
I'm Jim Roberts, president of the American Veterans Center, and I invite you to attend the 2015 National Memorial Day Parade Monday, May 25th at 2 o'clock p.m. along Constitution Avenue. Join thousands as we honor the service and sacrifices of our military from the American Revolution to today, featuring veterans units, marching bands, celebrities, and active duty troops. The parade is produced by the American Veterans Center and is made possible with support from Wells Fargo, Leidos, and USBA. To learn more about how you can see the parade, visit National Memorial Day Parade.com.
They say if you have your health, you have everything. But at Kaiser Permanente, we believe most people are spending too much time managing theirs, waiting on referrals, arguing about who covers what, trying to crisscross networks. It's all time that could be better spent strolling a farmer's market or trying out that new butts and guts class. At Kaiser Permanente, care and coverage work together. Everything you need is linked. So our talented doctors work as part of a team whose one shared goal is doing whatever it takes to keep you feeling good. To see how care and coverage together can make your life healthier and easier, take a few minutes and visit kp.org. We promise you it will be time well spent. Kaiser Permanente. Together we thrive.
What happens when you bring care and coverage together? Doctors spend less time on paperwork and more time with patients. Top docs doing their thing. Visit kp.org/believe.
Top doctors listed in Baltimore Magazine, November 2013, and Washingtonian Magazine, March 2014. Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired and entertained and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Tyson Corner offices of Offutt Kerman. This is your host, Dana Theus with EmpowerCoaching.com. I'm here with my co-hosts helping me sponsor the show, and we'll introduce them as we go. But let's start with our guests. Mark, why don't you read off our guests?
Sure. We have a great lineup today. We're going to start with Doug Allen, the CEO of Virginia Railway Express. Then Christine Williamson, the Government Contracting Industry Practice Leader of CohnReznick. Monica Joseph, CEO and owner of Alex Alternative Experts, and we're going to end with Dan Regard, the CEO and co-founder of iDiscovery Solutions.
Thank you. First up, we have Doug Allen, CEO of Virginia Railway Express, also known as the VRE. Doug, what is the VRE?
VRE is a commuter rail system from Northern Virginia into Washington, D.C.
And how big or small is it?
We have a budget of about $130 million a year. Our staff is about 40, and we have a contracting group that operates the trains for us. That's about 130 people.
So I have to ask, when you were a kid, did you play with trains?
Yes, a little bit. Mostly I played baseball and other sports, but I do enjoy trains. I love public transportation.
How old were you when you first discovered your love for sports?
Oh, from the very beginning. I have brothers who played sports, so we would go in the backyard and play football or basketball, and so from a very young age. And then we had a large family in the neighborhood, and they were always had a baseball game or a basketball game, so I'd always go over there and always had something to do.
So where did you grow up?
I grew up in Iowa, a small town in northern Iowa.
And how many brothers and sisters?
I have three brothers and one sister.
And where are you in the pecking order?
I'm right in the middle.
Right in the middle?
Yeah.
What does being a middle child mean?
Well, it means you always, growing up, it meant you always had someone to play with or hang out with. And different experiences. Being a middle child, you kind of live vicariously through your older brothers, and then as your younger kids are coming up, you kind of help them along too.
What did you learn being a middle child that helps you be a successful CEO today?
I think listening to other perspectives and where they're coming from and seeing how we could move together is in trying to accomplish different things, and just getting along with people and knowing that you're not always the leader and that sometimes you have to follow.
Wait a minute. You're CEO and sometimes you're not the leader?
Yes. You just sometimes you hang on for dear life, and other times you... But I think you really look at what needs to be directed, and then once you point people in the right direction, and then you have to let them go and do it, and you just kind of make sure things are going along the right way, but you don't have to direct every step of the what needs to be done.
So take us back to those Iowa cornfields. What was your first job?
Well, it was detasseling corn, which is a difficult job.
Is that the same as shucking it?
No, it has to do with making hybrid corn, and so it has a lot to do with biology. And so we had a research and a corn producing seed corn company that produced hybrid corn. And to do that, you have to take the tassels off of one brand of corn, one type of corn, so that the other type of corn can intermix with that corn, and you create hybrid seed that way. And so there weren't a lot of jobs in Iowa during the summer, and that was one of them. And so we all would sign up and take our share of an acre and be paid all of $30 for doing that for the summer. So
what did you do with the money? $30 for the summer?
Yeah, we didn't do much with the money. There wasn't much. So probably bought soda pop and gum and things like that.
So I'm curious, how do you go from corn detasseling for $30 a summer to getting the appreciation for the systems and the complexity of the kind of business that you run today.
Well, doing that job, you found out you don't want to do that for a living, so then you go to find something else. I was always kind of interested in a lot of different things, and so I'd always look at how things operate and try and figure out, you know, how does that work and how does that relate to something else. And that just, when I went into college, I took a number of different classes and came across something I really liked, and it turned into planning, and then it led to kind of what I'm doing now.
So you mentioned also sort of a turning point leaving Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
What was that about?
Well, it started when I was early in my college career. I took a geography class and really liked it. And so I went to a professor and said, what can I do with geography? And he said, well, you could pick up a planner. And I said, what's that? Because, again, I grew up in a small town in Iowa. We didn't plan much. And so he said, well, you could, you know, planning is, you can plan cities. And so that led to going to graduate school and getting a master's degree. And then a job came up in Texas in a regional planning organization, transportation planning. And so I went from Iowa to Texas and worked for that Council of Governments regional planning organization, which led to us developing plans for a new transit authority, which turned out to be Dallas Area Rapid Transit.
So, Doug, you mentioned in the green room earlier that when you were younger, you got really excited to get people moving in the same direction.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us about that?
Kid growing up, had a lot of friends in the neighborhood, and we all tried to come up with activities to do, and so we would discuss what we should do and reach consensus and go off and do that. So a lot of personal interaction was easy back then because you had a lot of friends in the neighborhood. As I developed in my career, pretty much the same thing. You work with different professionals. They have their own ideas. But I always would tend to gravitate, what do we really want to accomplish, and then how do we help align everybody to accomplish that? And then that just has continued throughout my career.
So you're not just giving orders. You're trying to get a consensus to follow a vision?
That's true. I like to think I can see what we want to accomplish. I see what the vision is. And I've been very successful in developing complex steps to get to that point. And it's something that I've been able to either have inherently or develop, but I know where we want to go, and I know the steps to get there. And it essentially is a problem-solving issue. And as I think through these things and I see, oh, there's going to be a problem in this area, I back up a few steps, think of how to get around that. And so it helps identify for the people I'm working with to help guide the process, but essentially you have to let them kind of go down the path, and if you see they're strained from it, then help them get back on the path.
Doug, what's the hardest thing about keeping the trains running on time?
We operate on our private freight railroads, so one of the things we do is make sure we have good working relationships with our private railroads, the CSX and Norfolk Southern. We, a few years ago, saw that if we didn't have reliable equipment, we weren't going to be able to run on time. And so a process was begun to buy new equipment, make sure it was maintained properly so that when the trains needed to move, they were ready to go and they weren't going to break down. Those are the two basic issues. And then having the discipline, which we do with our contractor, this train leaves at 5:05 and it leaves at 5:05. And then, again, having the reliable equipment and the working relationship with the freight railroads is the key.
What do you remember Mom and Dad doing when you were a kid?
My dad was the high school principal in our town, and Mom was a stay-at-home mom until probably my junior year, and then she went to work at the high school as the person that was in charge of the disciplinary room. So she got to see my friends during the school day. Fortunately, I didn't have to do that too often.
You didn't end up in the disciplinary
room. Once I did, yeah.
Often.
Once I did, and you can imagine what the rest of them thought of that. So, I was a pretty good student, pretty good kid. But so my folks were both at the high school, my junior and senior year.
I'm curious whether you ever got any pressure to go into education.
No pressure. Actually, that's what I wanted to do. That's what I started out doing, is thinking I wanted to be a coach or a teacher and a coach. And some days I look back on that and kind of wish I would have continued that, but I really like what I'm doing now. And it's essentially the same thing. When you're trying to teach people, you try to help them identify what, you know, here's what you need to learn and here's how you're going to get there. And so that's what I wanted to do when I started my college career, but then I turned into being a planner, which led to being a CEO of a transit system.
Mm-hmm. But you're still teaching and coaching along the way.
Yeah, that's true. We are. And that's, it really does fit in with what CEOs do is look for the talent and put people in the right position. And even after when I had my own kids, I would help by coaching their friends in basketball. And I always liked that because here's what the talents are of the different individuals, and some of them weren't very good, but they had different skill sets, and so you put them in a position where you can really have them do something that helps. And that was just a lot of fun in helping put these kids in the position of working as a team to try and win a basketball game. That's what, again, kind of fits into what we do as a CEO.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned you have kids. Is it harder to run a railway company or to be a father?
Well, in my case, it was harder to run a railroad company because our kids were pretty good. They weren't bad. Our daughter's a teacher now, and our son's just finishing up his finance degree. So it, being a parent is difficult and in ways, but it also very rewarding in ways. So it's you know, helping them along the way, pointing, you know, things out that they might want to consider, and providing them the support they need. So,
what's the website?
We are VRE.org.
This is Dana Theis with my co-host, Joe Applebaum of Potomac Companies. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in just a minute, right after this business spotlight. Joining us for this business spotlight is Ted Bilich, CEO of Risk Alternatives. Ted, what is Risk Alternatives?
Risk Alternatives is an Arlington, Virginia-based consulting company that provides risk management services for nonprofits and small businesses.
So what's the perfect client for Risk Alternatives? What is it they need?
The perfect client is a smaller organization that is looking to scale in some way. They want to build the resources that they need to thrive. And in order to build those resources, they need to professionalize.
But talk about risk. What kind of risk do these people encounter?
Well, Dana, so often people say that what you need in business is a big idea. I disagree. I don't think that's the full picture. You don't just need the big idea. You need to be able to execute on all the little things that make that big idea inevitable. Those little things require you to identify threats and opportunities and deal with them on a daily basis, and they make that a part of your routine.
So what do you enjoy most about working with these companies and helping them address these smaller risks?
There is that moment of epiphany when a smaller organization, either a founding team or the founder, him or herself, realizes that I really can do this. I can make decisions with clarity and get that peace of mind.
And that epiphany, you help them get there?
That's exactly right. What we do is we help build the systems that make that a part of their routine.
What's the website?
www.risk-alternatives.com.
Thank you for listening to this Business Spotlight.
This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Dr. Shirley Davis, President and CEO, The Success Doctor. Welcome, Shirley. Shirley, what's The Success Doctor all about?
It's a global workforce and talent management consulting organization. What we do is track trends, and we identify best practices and strategies for organizations around the world of all sizes, all industries, mm-hmm. and help them understand how to get great talent, how to keep it, and how to make sure that they get the most.
And what's your role in the company?
My role is president and CEO, and I actually do a lot of the coaching and speaking and consulting.
And what do you like most about that?
Absolutely love the strategy development and helping to get leaders to that aha moment.
Mm-hmm. And what makes the organization so special, in your view?
Capturing a lot of the great best practices that we've been able to do. And I think, you know, my brand, I build great relationships and I provide them what they need instead of what I want them to have.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think the clients appreciate most about you and your company?
I make the strategies, even though they're global, I make them very, very customized and practical.
And who, in your view, is the ideal client, the perfect client?
The perfect client is one that has a need, and the perfect client is one that can recognize that there is an opportunity with the strategies that we provide for them to make their organizations better.
Mm-hmm. And what do you personally enjoy most about the work?
I love seeing the strategies come to life. I love seeing the impact and the results that come as a result of it. Mm-hmm. And I love when they call me back and thank me because they've seen change.
That's excellent. So what's the website for the company?
DrShirleyDavis.com. That's www.drshirleydavis.com.
Thank you, Shirley. We've been speaking with Dr. Shirley Davis, President and CEO, The Success Doctor. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Dana Theus. Next up, we have Christine Williamson, partner at Cohn Resnick. Christine, what is Cohn Resnick?
We are a national certified public accounting firm.
And how big or small is it?
It is the 11th largest in the country.
And how long have you been with the firm?
My firm of 40 years old, Watkins Meehan, merged with Cohn Resnick last November, 2014.
And when did you start with the original firm?
24 years ago.
24 years ago. So you're actually not like everybody else who's changing jobs all the time.
Exactly. I'm what you call a lifer, I guess.
Where did that sense of loyalty come from? What was going on with you as a child where loyalty was really present in your life?
My parents were both civil agents, workers for the federal government, and I guess I believed that once you start with a company, you learn a lot about that company and move up. And I still believe that today, but I think I got that from my parents.
Mm-hmm. How many brothers and sisters do you have?
I'm an only child.
An only child. How does being an only child inform your success today?
Well, I was reflecting back on that I think I had to be older than I was at some times. I had to be around a lot of different people with my parents. So it was a blessing and a curse because I wanted everything because I was an only child, so I figured I was supposed to get everything.
You mean it's true that only children are sometimes a little spoiled?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I'm proud of that. I can be proud of that. But I had to learn to stand up on my own. You know, there is a lot of times where you're alone and you're with older people. So I think that taught me to be very independent.
You mentioned something about your early engagement with sports and competitiveness was not on the sports field, but you gained an appreciation for it. So what were you doing as a kid in the not being in sports but loving sports?
My father really loves sports. So there's three TVs downstairs with different types of sports on, and he would run a little football betting group with his friends. And so just sports were a big deal, and I think sports is a great way for everybody to get together and have fun. So I might have not been doing sports, but I like when people are around each other. I was very social, and so I think that that's a good thing. That's what I do now. I like to be around people.
And you gained a competitive spirit from that, too.
Yeah, very, very competitive. I think we should all have healthy competition with each other, I think, is good for us.
Does that reflect in your success in business, being competitive?
I think it does. Healthy competition, obviously. But
so what do you mean by healthy competition?
Well, you don't want to be malice or negative to somebody when you're trying to move up. I believe in circling yourself, surrounding yourself with good people so that you all look good. But I still think that if you're comparing numbers with each other or comparing wins and losses, looking at metrics, that helps incentivize people, and that's probably healthy competition.
Mm-hmm. Being incentivized.
Right.
You mentioned something about a turning point being when you moved from Maryland to Virginia and your career kind of opening up. What was that about? What was going on in your life then?
So my husband had an opportunity to move with his company to Manassas, Virginia from Southern Maryland. And I just said, yes, we have a Tyson's Corner office. Let's do it. I never visited the Tyson's Corner office. I never met a person at the Tyson's Corner office. I'm a very optimistic person. I don't like negativity. So I jump into things sometimes before I know a lot about it. But I think that's sometimes a good thing that I do that because I think I can handle myself. So we moved over, and it was a smaller office. And I think at that time in my career, being a small fish, a small large fish in a small pond would help me, and it has helped my career.
So you mentioned you're very optimistic. Where did that come from?
Probably just parents, and my mother told me never to depend on anyone, not a man, no one. Just so I think you have to be very optimistic, and I read a lot about, you know, when you're sick, if you're more optimistic, you'll heal better. Every day there's a lot of bad things that happen, and I'd rather be optimistic than dwell on the negatives.
So some people find it really hard to be optimistic when they're in a negative state of mind. What would you tell them that you've learned about optimism that can help them?
It's hard, but I think you always try to find the positive in everything, and negativity just brings you down. I think if there's always a bright light in everything that you're doing, and so you need to focus on that versus the negative, because those will go away. And I just think the positive will shine if you have patience.
Christine, how does that fit into picking accounting as a profession?
Well, accounting is all about helping people. Accounting departments are like the nucleus of every company. It touches every part of a business. And I'm kind of that person where I want to help people and be around people. So that kind of fits along with accounting. And sometimes the numbers don't look good, so it can be negative. It's always the accountant's fault if the numbers don't look good. But I like to help people solve problems. I like to help my clients solve problems. So regardless of the, it looks horrible, there's always a way for anything to come out, you know, in the end, if you help people with options. And so I think that's the optimism I use on a day-to-day basis at the accounting firm.
Where did you discover your love for accounting and numbers?
Junior year in high school, I did a lot of things in high school, very social, but didn't worry about the academics as much. Took an accounting class my junior year and fell in love with it, knew that's what I wanted to do, and I never turned back.
I'm really curious. You seem like an interesting combination of sort of outgoing and social, but able to focus. I mean, a lot of people think of numbers people as introverts, but you don't come across that way.
I don't have the pocket protector and the visor.
No, exactly. So how do you find those things work together? Do they help you be more successful?
Yes. And for people to move up in accounting firms, they actually have to have those qualities and those characteristics. And so it's difficult. We're supposed to be technicians, and we're supposed to be very good and know all of the accounting principles. But then at the same time, there's a lot of relationships that we build with our customers, and there's a lot of trust. So we have to be business developers. We have to be networkers. We have to be able to go out and play golf. We have to be able to go in and, you know, do a tax return or a financial statement. So that to move up in an accounting firm, you have to have a lot of characteristics.
You also mentioned that you coach and advise and mentor the women working for you, in particular how to be in business with credibility. What do you tell them?
So one thing I tell them is to understand sports, because the men in the room like to hear about sports and talk about sports. So the knowing what happened the day before in sports, for going to a lunch meeting. Just being aware of that. Sports is just such a big part of our world that it really does bring people together if you think about it. So that's one thing I tell them, and then I tell them not to sit back, to like they say now, lean forward and, you know, lean into what you want to do. Don't think about the next 2 years or something that's going to happen that won't let you achieve what you want to do in your career.
So if women need to understand sports, what do the men need to understand?
Okay. I got an hour? No.
In the next 20 seconds.
I think the men should always realize that women have a voice at the table. And I think letting them speak at the table. If a woman's not speaking and they're in a meeting with you, point them out and ask them, because I think there's a rule of thumb that if you don't say anything after a couple minutes in a conversation, you're less likely to join into the conversation. So I think women should join in as soon as possible, and men should, help them to be be in part of the conversation.
What's the website?
www.coneresnick.com.
This is Dana Theus with my co-host, Mark Cohen of Opti4. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a minute right after this Business Spotlight.
This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining me for this segment is Doug Kay, who is a principal with a firm called Offit Kerman. What is Offit Kerman, Doug?
Offit Kerman is a full-service law firm in the Mid-Atlantic region with offices from Philadelphia all the way down to Tyson's Corner, Virginia, where I work.
Right. And you're a lawyer with the firm?
I'm a lawyer with the firm.
What practice area do you specialize in?
I mostly do work in commercial litigation, although I also do work with in doing criminal defense and personal injury, anything that gets me to trial.
Anything that gets you to trial. Well, why do your customers appreciate you?
I think they appreciate me because I am a careful and sympathetic listener, and I try to offer concrete solutions to their most vexing legal problems.
Well, give us an example. Do you have, without mentioning specifics, a recent example of where you were really good at this? How about your favorite client up till now, without getting into two particulars there?
Well, I represented a fellow who was in a commercial lease, and the landlord was determined to make him pay more than he should have been paying. And we had to go to court, and we had to go all the way through trial, and the client really appreciated the effort, and we got an excellent result for the client. And that was very satisfying, and since then he's been talking me up all over town, so I can't thank him enough.
Yeah. What's the best part of practicing law for you?
I would say that it is taking people through difficult circumstances when they think they don't have any options and trying to find a good solution for them.
Right. What's the website address for the law firm?
www.offitkerman.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Doug Kay, who's the principal with Offit Kerman. This is Peter Schwartz, and that was your Business Spotlight. This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is
David Sondi.
And David, what's the name of your company?
Pocket Math.
Tell us a little bit about Pocket Math.
We're a mobile ad platform.
And what does that mean?
Basically, it means that we give you access to the ability to advertise on mobile phones, tablets, in games, apps, and on mobile websites.
So if I'm a manufacturer of a product, I could actually advertise that product on a cell phone?
Absolutely.
Is that the wave of advertising now? Is that where we're all headed?
It's definitely the industry that is picking up steam.
And when did you, and you own this company, right?
Well, I'm one of people who runs the DC office.
I see. And why did you want to do this?
The entrepreneurial spirit, the opportunity to build something.
What makes you good at it?
I've done it before.
Uh-huh. Give us an example of somebody that's advertised successfully on a mobile device.
There's quite a few. Restaurants are excellent. Point of sale retail is an excellent example of, you know, using it when your proximity is close to the retail store.
Mm-hmm.
And delivering up a valuable coupon and then driving that individual back into the store.
And why do you think the consumer likes it?
It's personal.
So it can be personalized to the very phone?
It can be. The technology is still evolving, so it's not as detailed demographically as desktop or display. But as we evolve, we'll get better at that.
Mm-hmm.
And so right now we're able to do a lot on tracking via a device ID.
Mm-hmm. And why do you like this so much, personally?
It's just a fast-moving industry.
And what's the website address?
Pocketmath.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with David Sondi, who's with a company called Pocket Math. This has been your Business Spotlight. Thank you.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Dana Theus, with my co-host, Katie Jordan of Verisol. Next up, we have Monica Jordan, CEO and owner of Alex Alternative Experts. Monica, what is Alex Alternative Experts?
It's Monica Joseph, and Alex Alternative Experts is a government contracting firm.
How big or small is it?
We're about 125 employees.
And how long have you been with the firm?
I've actually been with Alex for 26 years.
Did you found it?
No, I bought the division of a predecessor company that I had worked for 19 years and made the an asset purchase in 2006.
And what led you to want to buy into the firm?
I had worked with the same group of people that had founded the original Alex, and we were a family. We'd grown up together in the business, and when the owner was looking for an exit strategy, it was really a decision that I needed to make as to whether or not I wanted to be part of that exit strategy or step up and try and keep this work family together. So that's what I did.
Was it a natural decision, or did you have some qualms?
No, it wasn't a natural decision. It was a difficult decision because I had some personal challenges at home. My husband had been diagnosed a few years earlier with multiple sclerosis, and I had small children. And so it was really a difficult decision to make because I knew of the challenges ahead. And also financially, I needed to make sure that there was the financial support. He was very, very supportive of that, though.
Your husband was?
Yes, absolutely.
So that's a big risk to take at a difficult time in life.
It was a huge risk, but the way we looked at it, we had a small RV that we owned outright, and we said, well, the worst thing that could happen is we've got an RV, and he's got some land in West Virginia that was owed to him by his grandparents. So that was what we considered to be the worst-case scenario, and we were fine with it. So
I'm really curious, when you were growing up, did your parents ever have to make a decision like that?
My mom actually did. We were originally from the Dominican Republic, and when my mom found herself divorced at a young age, 25 years old, with three small children, and she made the decision to move to the United States with us, and that was a huge risk that she took. She came over as a diplomat, and she worked for the Dominican Embassy. And I think in a lot of ways, I look to the strength that she had in bringing us over here. It was huge.
How old were you?
I was almost 4 years old at the time.
Do you have any memories of the move?
Yes, actually, I do. I remember going to the consulate and having my picture taken, there for our passports. I remember the airplane ride. I remember our first apartment complex that we lived in. So yes.
How was it, as a kid? Did it seem risky? Did it seem like a big vacation?
I don't remember it to that detail. I do remember it being different because as a kid we were living in my grandparents' home and they had a really nice home. And here in the United States we lived in a one-bedroom apartment and we all of us slept in the one room. So definitely was more confined.
Definitely. How many brothers and sisters were you sleeping with?
At the time there was just three of us, but now there's five. So,
and where are you in the pecking order?
I'm the middle child.
The middle child, another middle child.
Yes.
So how did being a middle child inform your success today?
I think being the middle child has a lot of advantages because you can look to your older siblings and see what to do and also what not to do, so you can learn from them. And then you also have the advantage of, being sort of the for me, I have a smaller, younger brother that's 10 years younger than I am, and so I almost became like a parent to him. I call him my first baby. So I have the advantage of learning how to care for, younger children.
Do you find that caretaking skill comes in handy as a CEO?
I think so. I think where I get my joy from is actually from helping other people and trying to figure out how to make other people successful. And
How do you get to do that running a company?
Well, it's all about, looking at individual skill sets and how they can flourish. And just because you're not good in one job doesn't mean you can't be good at something else. And so it's really looking to identify early on where individuals can be successful and help them get to that point. And so I tell folks to, talk to me. Let me know what you want to be when you grow up so that I can help you along the way. If I don't know, I can't help create the path for you.
Monica, was that some of the reason behind buying the company?
The reason behind buying the company is really to keep our the office family, I guess my Alex family, together. We had grown up together. There's a core of six or seven of us that, we've worked together for 20, 25 years now. So that was really the motivation to doing that. And then it actually turned out to be a great decision because as the owner of the company, I created an environment where there's a lot of flexibility. So you can have a good home and work-life balance, which is obviously really important for me since I have my husband and the two children.
So, Monica, when you bought the company, you were planning on taking it in one direction, but the economy changed.
Correct.
So what happened?
So I bought what was the staffing division of my predecessor company, and the bottom dropped out of the economy, and so there really wasn't an opportunity to grow the staffing group. So what we did is we took some of the service offerings that we provided on the commercial side, and we turned them into solution packages that we could sell into the federal space. We started marketing to the federal government.
So is that part of your mission to be a caretaker for your employees?
It is part of my mission, but it's also grown in that now as I'm servicing the federal space, I notice that a lot of the federal employees are, as some of the older employees are retiring and some of the newer ones are coming in, there are gaps, there are knowledge gaps. And so I come in and I usually tell them, don't worry, I'm going to make your job easier, I'm here to help you, and they kind of chuckle. But in the end, that's really what we want to do, is we want to alleviate some of the stress that they have of running some of their programs and so that they can focus on other things.
What has been the most surprising thing to you about buying a company and running it?
All of the legislation that we have to comply with on the federal side as a federal government contractor. So it wasn't really a surprise of growing and running a business. It was really the complexity of government contracting. I think that was the biggest surprise.
Take us back to making that decision about deciding to own the company and your husband's support. Talk to us about what it means to be a successful woman running a business and also in charge of a family.
I think it means that you have to wear a lot of different hats. It's very, very important that I have my husband's support because I couldn't have done it without him. And actually, he's my biggest fan. He's always the one saying, you know, you can do this. You've been doing it all along, you know. So if I ever have any self-doubt, he's always the one that says, you know, why are you doubting yourself? You know you can do this. And then on the flip side, as far as being the support for the family, I have to put my life, you know, because it's all jumbled up between the business and the kids and my husband and trying to do all this, I always say I try to put things in boxes, you know. So when I'm at work, I really try hard to keep my work in a space and then my family life in a space. And as much as I can, I try not to mix the two. For sanity's sake, because you can, especially with all the devices and electronics that we have, you can really just be sucked into one thing or the other and get distracted. So I think it's really important to have boundaries on both sides.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that your husband has MS, and I'm wondering for those of us who don't live closely to that disease, if you can share with us things that we should know about people who are struggling with it.
I think it can be tricky because when you meet him, he'll only meet you when he feels good. So when you meet him, you'll say, wow, this guy's 6'1". He looks like the epitome of health. He looks great. He's jolly. But what you don't see is what's going on the inside. So with MS, there's a lot of pain. There's a lot of nerve pain. And because it's a disease of the central nervous system, you don't know what symptoms you're going to get on a daily basis. And so he chuckles. He says, the first thing I do when I wake up in the morning is I kind of swing my legs over and I figure out, okay, what's working today and what is it? And then that's how he can make decisions about what he's going to do that day.
Mm-hmm. Has that given you a different sense of empathy for dealing with your employees?
I've always been a very empathetic person. And so I'm sure it has. I'm sure it has. I think what it does, though, is it makes me be very concerned about their work-life balance and to make sure that they're not, you know, just focused on work and they're spending that quality time with their family as well.
So does this empathy ever get in the way of being an effective leader?
Sometimes it can. And so what I do is I do have advisors, you know, because sometimes I get too emotionally vested in a decision or in an individual or in a situation that it may not be a good decision for the group, you know, because I'm emotionally vested in something. And so I do have advisors that I rely on and say, okay, this is what I'm thinking. You know, am I going emotionally down this road or what's really best for the organization as a whole? And I do believe in advisors, and that is a piece of advice that I would give to anyone in business is to make sure you surround yourself with good advisors.
Is your mom still alive?
Yes, she is.
What does she think of your success?
She's extremely proud.
I bet she is. Yeah. What's the website?
www.alexinc.com.
This is Dana Theus with my co-host, Brian Cohen of Offutt Kerman. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight. Joining us for this Business Spotlight is Wes Burnett, partner at Optifor. Wes, what is Optifor?
Optifor is a securities firm that integrates legal, tax, and financial and risk in order to offer optimal results for clients.
Who's your perfect client?
Perfect client is someone who actually would like to combine services, make their life simpler, and is very family-oriented. Our firm itself is very family-oriented. We love helping families take care of their own, and that can be multi-generational.
So what would a family need when they would come to you?
Typically, what they're doing is trying to simplify their personal life by trying to have somebody else worry about their legal and their tax and financial affairs and present them with solutions rather than questions.
Solutions rather than questions. So give us an example of a good solution.
A good solution is something that results, for example, in the lowest tax bill, the greatest savings, and taking care of the values important to the family, like saving for college for children or grandchildren or something along those lines.
So what do you enjoy most about your work?
My clients. Although a second place, a close, would be my staff, because I recruit very specifically people who have the same values as our clients. So we truly are very involved with our clients' lives, and they are family to us.
What about your family? Are they in the business too?
No, although there's certainly plenty of lawyers and financial advisors and so on in the business. But no, they all have their own lives, and we're very pleased, quite frankly, with that. I actually have a wife who's a teacher for 42 years, so I take a lot of my values from her.
What is the website?
Optifor.com, OPTIFOUR.com.
Thanks for listening to this Business Spotlight. Here for today's Business Spotlight is Chris Vannetti, Vice President of Contract and Project Staffing Services at Hire Strategy. Chris, what is Hire Strategy?
Hire Strategy is a D.C. Metro-based professional services and staffing firm specializing in information technology placements as well as HR and administrative, sales and marketing, and accounting and finance.
And what do clients love about working with Hire Strategy?
We take an old-school approach to staffing, and what I mean by that is, you know, back in the day before social media and email, it was all about people. And we're one of the few and last firms in this marketplace, probably nationwide, that really interviews in person, takes the time to know their candidates, and 100% takes the time to know their clients, their pushes and pulls, the positives and negatives, to make the right match. So it's truly a consultative approach.
Mm-hmm. What do employees love about working for Hire Strategy?
It's definitely our culture. And the employees that work for us, I think they would all to a person say, we believe in leadership, not management. And that's one of our key mottos. And leading people is a definite thing that we like to do, and we like to do it often.
So what does that mean for a new employee? They get to be a leader?
They can get to be a leader, but they're a leader of their own practice, of their own business. We allow them to be entrepreneurial. We allow them to make their own decisions, and we're there to help them along the way, correcting them if need be. But motivation and leadership is the one way that we think that people are going to excel with us.
What do you love most about your job?
I love that I get the opportunity to be a leader and to be entrepreneurial and work with a great bunch of people and a great group of executives along with myself. So it's a great place to be.
What's the website?
The website is www.hirestrategy.com.
Thank you for listening to this Business Spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Dana Theus, with my co-host, Tanya Blakely of Optifor. Next up, we have Dan Regard, CEO and co-founder of iDiscovery Solutions. Dan, what is iDiscovery Solutions?
Dana, iDiscovery Solutions is an expert consulting firm. We specialize in technology within the legal space, which means applying technology to litigation and investigations.
And how did you get involved co-founding this firm?
I was fortunate. My co-founder, Neil Lawson, and I have known each other since the early 1990s, working in document repositories for litigation.
in early 2000, I was tasked with starting a division for a consulting firm known as FTI Consulting, a division for e-discovery. I looked up Neil, found that he was in the D.C. area, convinced him to join us. He did, and he and I have been collegial business partners, albeit sometimes for other people, building divisions ever since.
So sometimes partnerships go wrong, but apparently that hasn't happened. Why is that?
Any partnership, like a good friendship or even a marriage, has to do with commitment and working through the times when you really love being with each other and other times when you know you don't see eye to eye. In our case, I think we recognize that we are stronger as a team because we don't have the same strengths and weaknesses.
How's that? Like, what role do you play? Good cop, bad cop sort of thing?
Well, depends on who you ask. I think generally I'm the more public-facing figure within the company. I'm very gregarious. I love public speaking. I love mingling with our clients and understanding their problems. Neil also understands the problems, but he's more execution-focused. And so I like to say, sometimes half-jokingly, I make the promise, but he delivers.
Well, it must be nice to have somebody who has your back who really delivers.
It is spectacular, and it's resulted in building a company that's founded on those principles.
Take us back to when you were a kid. Did you have like a brother that you were a partner with?
No, I did not. I was the oldest of ultimately four, although my younger sister is so much younger, she was more like a child of the three of us than a sister because she was 9 years younger than my youngest brother. My two brothers were 4 and 6 years younger than I was.
So they have
a great friendship. I'm just the older brother.
What did they think about you at the time? What would they have told us about you when they were kids?
You know, we didn't play. We played a lot because we traveled a lot together. But again, my brothers, JD and Andre, spent a lot more time together forming their friendship. I was the older brother who was a little bit removed. But at the same time, we have a spectacular family relationship today. We still talk on a regular basis. We have family meetings. We support each other's business ventures.
So where'd you grow up?
I grew up in South Louisiana, a place that's so far south, I consider I-10, my own personal Mason-Dixon line.
And is that Creole or Cajun?
That's a great question. It's Cajun. It's the heart of Acadiana. Lafayette, Louisiana, is the closest big area. I grew up in a town called New Iberia, which might be well known for Tabasco.
How did you get from New Iberia to DuPont Circle, Washington, D.C.?
Probably like many people, by accident. I ended up going to New Orleans for law school to get an MBA. From there, I moved out to Phoenix. There, I had an opportunity with Deloitte and Touche, and I commuted to L.A. for a year and then New York for 3 years. By the time I got to New York, I joined FTI and commuted to D.C. for 3 years, moved to D.C. only to commute to London for a year. Now I'm here, and I enjoy being here. It's spectacular.
You skipped over your first job, though, which I want you to tell us about, as a beekeeper at 8 years old.
Yes. My father was deathly afraid of bees and decided the cure for that was to become a beekeeper. And he was an entrepreneur, and in order to pass that on, he wanted me to be the beekeeper. So at age 8, we got a box. We captured a swarm, and we populated our beehive with our own swarm of bees and started raising bees and collecting honey on an annual basis.
And how did this gregarious, outgoing salesman manifest at 8 years old in beekeeping?
Well, once you have the honey, you have to do something with it. So our solution was to set me up with a little Red Ryder wagon and walk door to door, knocking on the door. If you can imagine an 8-year-old blonde-haired boy asking if you want to buy homemade honey, everyone bought it. I thought it was because it was really good. I think it was just because it was cute.
So Dan, that experience and something that your father taught you, what was that?
You know, it wasn't like a revelation. It was more like something you grew up with, and then you ended up looking back 40 years later and saying, wow, I have this skill set. But it wasn't a big transition. And that was fundamentally the ability to do anything you set your mind to and not having a fear of meeting people, but to the alternative, a real thirst for meeting people and learning about life.
And are you doing that same thing now in your business?
Oh, every day. I mean, our primary job is going into companies that have a problem, as I mentioned, legal or investigative, and quickly assimilating what the problem is, how their IT systems work and how that information might be important or critical in that particular investigation, how to collect it, manage it, and interpret it. So we're always learning something new. That's the fun part of our jobs. Every project is a new environment with new people, with new systems.
Well, you also told us that you were forced into a situation when you were about 20 years old.
Well, I was forced. My parents thought it was a great idea for me to sign up for a scholarship program to Germany. And
you must have been at the top of the list, right?
No, I was at the bottom of the list. I spoke no German, wasn't studying German, didn't aspire to German, and that earned me a spot at the very end of the standby list.
And when you went there, you were drinking beer and having fun, right?
I couldn't speak any language. I got water if I was lucky. I met nobody for the first 3 months, but ultimately, I had a great experience.
You worked also while you were there.
I did work. I had an internship at a company teaching courses in Microsoft Office products before they had been combined and with Lotus products.
And so how does that translate now to your company with interns?
Ah, that's a great question. So I worked there ultimately, but initially I was the gopher. I was the sidekick. I was the American intern who didn't speak the language. But their generosity and their hospitality they showed me made an impression. When I came back to the United States, now I have my own company. We make those opportunities for other young people. Hopefully someone who's at college age, looking for an opportunity to learn the business life. We don't expect to get a lot of value from them. We expect my employees to learn how to become patient teachers by bringing in interns. We do it every summer.
So it's important to teach your employees how to be better at what they do?
Absolutely. If they can't explain it to an intern, how can they explain it to a client or a judge?
That's excellent.
It is, and it sounds like this nurturing the next generation reflects itself in your life, too. You tell a great story about your daughters. You have two daughters.
Well, I've been blessed. I have a three-month-old daughter, Felicity, and a four-and-a-half-month-old daughter, Amelia. They're spectacular. Amelia has a real personality at four-and-a-half, and recently we've picked up the habit of walking to her school every morning together, which has just been revealing in how you see the world through the eyes of a four-and-a-half-year-old. She picks up more details about flowers and bricks and construction and cars than you could imagine. It's spectacular.
That sounds like such a great opportunity to go to the office having been revived already before you get there.
It's amazing. It's the best part of my day, hands down.
So I'll ask you the same question. Is it harder running a company or being a dad?
Ooh, great question. It's probably more challenging to be a dad because my daughter is much more demanding than my employees. I get a certain amount of respect at the company, I think, just because of my title that she has no umbrage with at all. The other side of it, though, I think running a company, people ask, you know, what's the most important thing? And what reminds me of what we're here to do is that every month, we have 45 to 50 mortgages that we pay. And for me, that's what gets us up in the morning.
What's the website?
www.idiscoverysolutions.com.
This is your host, Dana Theus, with my co-host, Ed Tolchin of Offutt Kerman. I would like to thank our sponsor today, Offutt Kerman, for hosting us. And Mark, would you like to thank our guests?
Sure. Thanks to Doug Allen, the CEO of Virginia Railway Express. Christine Williamson, the Government Contracting Industry Practice Leader at CohnReznick. Monica Joseph, the CEO and owner of Alex Alternative Experts. And Dan Regard, we just heard from, the CEO and co-founder of iDiscovery Solutions.
And a big thank you to you, our listening audience, for listening, because otherwise we wouldn't have a radio show. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on 1500 AM. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on 1500 AM. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFMHD2 Manassas, WTLPFMHD2 Braddock Heights Frederick, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy Athletics. Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO.
Federal News Radio's DoD Wednesday. At 3, DoD reporter Jared Serbu hosts On DoD, a discussion with senior managers about how the department meets its mission. At 4, in-depth host Francis Rose brings you Pentagon Solutions, a smart discussion on the issues and challenges of the defense community. Plus daily DoD updates, mornings and afternoons, Monday through Friday. DoD Wednesday on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
This paid commercial may not